Support comes from Mosby Building Arts, with laundry room designs meant to bring calm to everyday routines. More at callmosby.com.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. Many of the cars we see on the road today look the same. The headlights might have a different shape, and some trucks may be slightly more massive than others. But the basic shapes are there. Sedan, truck, SUV. Some sports cars are sleek and aerodynamic, but on the whole, what most people drive is, well, standard. Yet if you drive back in history to the world of automobile design in France before World War II, you'll find cars in a state of high fashion, produced in colors, designs, and shapes that make our present-day rides seem quite drab in comparison. This era of automotive and artistic expression has been attracting a lot of attention to the St. Louis Art Museum. Its exhibit, Roaring, features a dozen historic autos to explore connections between high art and beautiful cars. After opening in April, it's become the most popular exhibit at the museum since 2018. The exhibition closes in just a couple weeks, and because of the demand, there will be some after-hours opportunities to see it. To talk with us about Roaring, I'm joined now by its curator, Genevieve Kirchenovis. Jenny, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I'm thrilled to be here.
Congratulations.
Thanks.
So let's go back to the beginning. The idea for this exhibit started as a completely different project than COVID happened. What is it that kept you on this topic, you know, 5 years later?
Yeah, so we were initially scheduled to take a canned exhibition from the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, which was looking at the kind of larger, broader history of the automobile. And of course, it was going to open the summer of 2020. It was canceled. But I heard from folks across the museum, colleagues in many different departments, that they were really excited about the concept. They really wanted to have cars in the exhibition. And so I decided to sort of return to the idea, but with a much narrower focus. Mm-hmm. And I had happened to do my graduate work on the relationship between automobiles and fashion, haute couture in France in the 1930s, through the lens of these Concours d'Elegance, they were called these kind of car and fashion shows. So I thought that would be a kind of a good starting point, and then from there just expanded my lens a little.
Mm-hmm. What was it that sparked your interest in that relationship between cars and fashion and in that time period?
Yeah, so my dad is a car nut. And so when I was a child, I would always go to car shows with him, and we would oftentimes have a car that usually didn't run in our garage that he was sometimes tinkering with. And he really taught me about this fascinating period in the history of automobile culture and production, especially around these custom coach built cars. And so that sort of got my interest sparked at a young age. And from there, I've just always had a little bit of an interest in it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go back to the time period that mm-hmm. is covered, we're talking about France, 1918 to 1939, and that is a period that falls right between two world wars. Mm-hmm. What was it about what was happening then that made you want to explore this more deeply?
This is oftentimes called the kind of golden age of French car production. Although today we don't necessarily think of France perhaps as a major producer of luxury automobiles, at this time they really were. And actually, even before World War I, they were one of the major kind of cradles of the automobile. So the United States overtook them in production in around 1907, but France remained a very strong force in the kind of aesthetics and even technological mm-hmm. developments of automobiles. For that reason, there's just this flourishing of fantastic cars, oftentimes coming from this coach-built sector. Mm-hmm. France, of course, between the wars, was this magnetic center for many artists and designers around the globe. So you'll see in the exhibition designers really that were not born in France, coming from Ukraine, coming from United States, coming from Italy, really from all over. So I think it also represents this really interesting intermingling of ideas in this very vibrant moment. Of course, overshadowed in some ways or bookended by these, world tragedies.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to invite you to this conversation about the Roaring exhibit at the St. Louis Art Museum. What questions do you have for the exhibit's curator? And do you have a favorite car or object from this exhibition? Let us know what it is and why it has captured your imagination. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. Let's talk about one of these vehicles. One of the cars that people will see is the 1928 Citroën. Describe it for us, Jenny, and what it is that stands out to you.
Yeah. So this is the first car in the exhibition, actually. When you walk in, you'll see it. And it's, in a sense, an odd duck because it is one of the few mass-manufactured automobiles in the exhibition. But it has a very unique paint job, we'll say. So Bernadette Rampkers, who's a Dutch artist working today, was invited to paint the exterior of the automobile in this pattern, evoking a car that the artist Sonia Dolinay presented at the 1925 World's Fair in Paris. And so we really wanted to introduce this idea of the automobile as a source of artistic inspiration, also an interesting, you know, new exciting canvas for artistic expression. So we use this car as sort of a lens to look at this wider world of art and design at the moment. So Dolinay is a fascinating figure. She was born in Odessa. She eventually made her way to Paris, like so many bright and energetic artists. She married Robert Dolinay, who was a quite a famous painter at the time, but she worked across media. She was really undeterred by these historical hierarchies between, say, fashion and, you know, easel painting. She believed everything was worthy of her artistic attention. And so she created textiles, fashion, you know, prints, sometimes paintings, and then she also painted cars, famously, that she presented at the exhibition. So we really want to kind of introduce her work as one of these sort of omnivorous creative people.
You mentioned earlier custom coach-built car. What does that mean? And was it about the exterior as much as the interior or other way around?
Yeah, so both. At this time, if you were wealthy, you could have the opportunity to buy a chassis, which included the engine and the drivetrain, from mostly luxury manufacturers. And then you would take that chassis to your preferred coach builder, a carrossier, they're called in French. And they would create essentially a custom body for you to varying degrees. You know, this could take up to 2,000 hours of handwork by artisans, craftspeople working in these different ateliers. So they were really, you know, works of art, unique, very expensive, certainly, but also were a source of experimentation and innovation in terms of not just style, but also some things like adjustable seats and, you know, glove boxes and all of these other things that we maybe take for granted today.
And then you talked about car and fashion, like, together. How common was that during the period that you were covering in this exhibition?
Yeah, so if you see fashion magazines from this period, I mean, 9 times out of 10, there's a car in the illustration or the photograph. It really, they were ubiquitous. I think, and this is particularly retaining to women, so you'll see only women's fashion in the exhibition. And this is because the car really becomes an extension of the fashionable woman's ensemble and becomes a kind of stand-in for the modern woman herself. So, you know, the modern woman cut her hair, she played sports, she drank, she had sex, and she drove cars. And so it was really this part of this larger kind of fashioning or construction of the new woman in France and, and in, you know, globally.
Yeah. We have David, who is calling from Crawford County. David, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Oh, thanks. It's good to be here. Well, I've enjoyed roaring twice, and on the way out, I spoke to a staffer about, you know, who in the world curated this remarkable exhibit, and I was told, you know, it's a traveling exhibit. It was just pulled together for the St. Louis Art Museum. So now here she is on the radio. This is great, so congratulations. And so Bugatti Royale's in the Henry Ford Museum. This car comes from another place. The Talbot Lago comes from yet another place. So the logistics of pulling that together must, it just seems monumental, especially since, as I was told, it's just a slam exhibit only. So please discuss the, I mean, you must have, somebody is a great salesperson, and so kudos to all involved. It just was fabulous.
Oh, thank you so much. I can't claim credit, I have to say, for the logistics of all of this. So we obviously have a fantastic team of registrars and exhibition designers, but we also worked with a fantastic automobile historian and expert, Ken Gross. So he's really a legend in the field, and he truly knows everybody. And so, you know, these, in many cases, priceless automobiles were entrusted to us, really thanks to Ken and his incredible connections that he's cultivated over the course of, you know, a 50, 60 year career in the field. So we're really indebted to him. I actually first got to know Ken when I was organizing the other exhibition that was canceled from the V&A. And so I reached back out to him when I wanted to kind of revive this idea to ask if he was interested. And Ken was particularly excited about the idea because his father was in fashion. And so he also wanted to, he liked this idea of bringing these different elements together. Mm-hmm. But yes, you point out the Bugatti Royale. That's, I mean, I am so grateful to the Henry Ford Museum for loaning that to us because it rarely travels and it is an absolutely spectacular car.
And that was David calling from Crawford County. David, thank you so much for reaching out to us. We also have an open line for you. Give us a call at 314-382-8255. That's 314-382-TALK. We're going to take a very quick break here, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrot Corporation. With a commitment to serving the St. Louis community through local partnerships and charitable support, guided by Parrot's core values. More at parrot.com/culture.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation with Genevieve Cortinoves. Jenny is the curator behind Roaring, Art, Fashion, and the Automobile in France, 1918 to 1939. The exhibition, which is one of the St. Louis Art Museum's most popular since 2018, runs through July 27th, with some after-hours opportunities added to keep up with demand. Before the break, Jenny, we were talking about women. And I want to talk about women as drivers, you know, literally and figuratively. And in this exhibition, fashion, art, ephemera, you know, like magazine covers and advertising, present cars as more than just a mechanical or engineered vehicle. Talk with us about that and what this has to do with what is happening with women at this time.
Yeah. So we actually used two different women as kind of examples of these, I don't want to say completely divergent, but different sort of images of the modern woman behind the wheel, and their sort of fashion choices. So on the one hand, we have Hélène Nice, who was a famed race car driver, and we have her fantastic Bugatti race car in the exhibition. But next to it, we have this beautiful Hermes stag leather aviator style jacket with a wonderful little driving cap. And this very much is the kind kind of, or is inspired by the kind of more utilitarian wear that you might see, drivers of sporty cars wearing. But we wanted to think about the way the couturiers started adopting these ideas for, mainstream fashion, or at least for sort of everyday wear, mm-hmm. Even outside of the sort of rugged necessities of racing at the time. So we have this image, and I love to think about it in kind of conversation with some of these magazines, for instance, like Tamarit Olympica's famous cover for Didam magazine. This is a self-portrait where she's wearing this, close-fitting racing cap. She has this voluminous scarf, and we see her in the front of her green Bugatti. Mm-hmm. And she's almost rendered as slick and as streamlined as the car itself. So this kind of equation between the body of the woman, her fashion, and the car become very, very close and intertwined in this period. And then on the flip side, we have Josephine Baker, yes. Who is a major figure in the exhibition because she owned a number of really important custom coach-built cars. She loved the brand Delage, and so she had a number of Delage automobiles. And so we have actually rare footage of her presenting her Delage at a 1935 Concours d'Elegance. And these are these car and fashion shows that I mentioned earlier mm-hmm. that present the woman really... the car and a coordinating ensemble as the sort of pinnacle of Parisian elegance. And so you find women in sometimes in kind of sportswear, in much more streamlined, looser, fitting silhouettes. But then you also see people like Baker wearing fantastic, feathered collars and wonderful, more stereotypically kind of feminine accessories.
Mm-hmm. So including Josephine Baker, she is from St. Louis. Was the decision to have her be part of this driven in part, no pun intended, by her being a St. Louisan? What other reasons beyond the ones, that you shared and maybe that are particularly pertinent to migration and immigration?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, is that part of the reasoning?
For sure. I mean, she... her photographs, photographs of her presenting her cars at numerous different concours were widely published in magazines and newspapers around the world. The French press reported on her getting her driver's license, for instance. I mean, she was the toast of Paris. Mm-hmm. So she is certainly, we chose her partially because she's St. Louis born, but also because she is an inescapable presence in interwar France. And she really typified this glamorous, free, and car-loving woman in the interwar period. Certainly, she's also demonstrating these important immigration patterns of artists and designers coming from around the world and bringing their own kind of unique viewpoint, and then that becoming part of this larger story of French design in the period.
Mm. We'd like to take a call from another person. It's a car question. This is David, who is calling from Maplewood. David, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you very much.
Sure, go ahead.
There were some comments at the top of the program about the immense amount of time and talent that went into creating these vehicles. Can you put them maybe into some historical context compared to what the average Parisian would have seen on the streets of Paris at the time that these were being built? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so, I mean, these were relatively rare cars, I would say. You're much more likely to see a Citroën B14 driving down the streets of Paris. Famously, we opened the exhibition with this passage from Paris on Parade, which was a 1925 report of the kind of streets of Paris. And it mentions all of these, trucks from the department stores and little Citroëns and Renaults. And then it says, but there's the $10,000 Hispana Souza driving down the street. And so I think they were larger than life in a way and definitely commanded attention at the concours and other kinds of special events like the Paris Motor Show. But certainly most Parisians, A, did not drive or were buying, economical cars like the Citroën. The Henry Ford, I think, in their website very helpfully worked out the price of the Bugatti Royale. And I think it's around $40,000 equivalent mm-hmm. to an average salary of $1,400 a year. So
very much out of reach.
Yes.
Yes. These vehicles and the amount of work, David is referring to how much it took to get them to the museum. But the kind of workmanship that went into them, the number of hours of labor. Talk with us about one of the vehicles that is in the exhibition that really puts that on display in a way that that doesn't take a whole lot of work to really see.
Mm, yeah, I think the my favorite car in the show, I mean, it's hard to choose, but I've long had a crush on this automobile. I think it's the most beautiful in the world. It's a Fagoni and Falaschi designed Taubolago Type 150 CSS. It's from 1938. It's in the final gallery of the exhibition. It's this incredibly sculptural car. Has this, you know, sloping fender. It has actually an enclosed fender skirt in the back. So you'll notice some of them have entirely enclosed wheels, which you can imagine made them a little bit hard to drive. Mm-hmm. But they have a wonderful sort of floating quality to them. The bright work or the kind of metal accents on this car are incredible. You know, they swell, they slope, and you really get the sense that they could have only been done by very skilled, you know, artisans and craftspeople. So it's really, I think you can immediately see that this car was made by hand. And I put it in juxtaposition with other kinds of sculpture from the period, biomorphic sculpture, because I wanted to think about the way that these coach builders are really trying to sort of capture the vitality of nature and of matter in this, you know, hard mechanical world. Mm-hmm. And so I think they do this really beautifully. It has a kind of liquid quality to it.
It really does. And it is interesting that it's the last automobile you see in the exhibition, which, from what I understand, it was the order in which people see things as they go through sort of is a reversal of what you might see elsewhere. Like it goes from the everyday to what you might more typically see in a museum setting.
Yeah.
You know, I'd mentioned how popular this exhibition has been. And our first caller from Crawford County has already seen it twice. Why do you think people have embraced this exhibition the way they have?
I mean, I think the time period is fascinating. I think that these cars are very charismatic. I think the fashion is incredibly modern and, you know, strikingly modern. I think you mentioned there, you know, you could wear any of the dresses display tomorrow and you would look not out of place. So I think it's just maybe perhaps the modernity of the moment, but always underpinned by the sense of craftsmanship and the kind of human touch, I think, mm-hmm. that you also see there. Mm-hmm. So it's that interesting balance maybe between the two that gets people coming back.
Mm-hmm. And I can see why they would come back. There was so much to take in. I was there with my husband and my 9-year-old son, and they were kind of moving differently than I was. If you were to do like a part two of Roaring, what would that be? What would it do?
Like an extension in France, or would it be like another story?
Oh, anything you want.
Well, I would love to explore Italian design in the post-war period, because interestingly, the coach builders in France really suffered in the late 30s. Obviously, the Great Depression didn't help, and then a world war. And then in the post-war period, there were some major tax implications for them. And so many of them went out of business. But actually, the Italians sort of took the mantle. And so custom coach building lived on in Italy in the post-war period. And that's really also the great sort of economic post-war miracle of Italian design, furniture, fashion, everything. So I think, you know, it'd be a nice little pendant perhaps in the future.
So we shall see.
Yeah.
Genevieve Cortinovis is the curator behind Roaring, Art, Fashion, and the Automobile in France, 1918 to 1939. The exhibition runs through July 27th, which includes after-hours opportunities on Wednesday evenings starting tonight that were added to keep up with popular demand. Jenny, thank you for joining
us.
Thank
you. It was such a pleasure.
This episode was produced by Danny Wissentowski.
Audio engineering and podcast design by Aaron Dorr.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thank you.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis.